This will be a slightly different kind of talk. I'm going to be talking today about the NAFOREST 2100 project, or understanding the impacts of climate change on forests of the northeastern U.S. and eastern Canada. And obviously, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors on this. This particular iteration of co-authors represents the folks on the steering committee of the NAFOREST project, as well as the lead authors on five of the papers. But I do want to acknowledge that there are 50 other people that were also involved in making this project what at least I think has been successful. Just a short history. I wanted to say by the mid-2000s, but that didn't quite sound right. So by somewhere in that 2005, we recognized that there was a growing body of evidence in support of climate change in the Northeast. A lot of this coming from long-term research projects scattered across the region. At this time, new reports were also showing up that the rate of climate change was more rapid than predicted. I know you can't really see this in the back, but basically reports were showing that measured CO2 concentrations were at rates higher than the highest of the SRES emission scenarios. And finally, there was an increase in cacophony from both Washington and our state capitals that made it very clear that there was a need to try to educate the public about climate change and to provide a scientific basis for policies regulating carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas emissions. So in 2007, we started the NAFOREST 2100 project. This is a coalition of U.S. and Canadian scientists. We had two goals. The first was to synthesize the current scientific information on the impacts of regional climate change on forested ecosystems in northeastern North America. And the second, always a little bit more difficult for us scientists, was to translate this and make this information available to policymakers, land managers, and if possible, the concerned public. So we accomplished our first objective. We put together five synthesis or review papers on the impact of climate change on various aspects of forest ecosystems. These have been published as a special issue in the Canadian Journal of Forest Research. And we are in the end goal here of the second project. We're doing an executive summary of those five papers, and we hope to produce this as a Forest Service general technical report, as color glossy and accessible as they will let us do that. This is the table of contents of the executive report, and there's a lot of information in this, and I'm just going to highlight the climate and hydrology sections, forest composition and productivity, to give you a flavor of the kind of information that we're reviewing and summarizing. So the first section, kind of the backbone of the synthesis, was the climate and hydrology section. This was led by Tom Huntington, Andrew Richardson, Kevin McGuire, and Catherine Hayhoe. And this first slide is a graph of both the observed and the modeled temperature from 1900 to 2100. And for right now, please focus your attention on the black line. This is the thermistor record. And this shows that surface air temperatures had warmed by 0.8 degrees C over the last century in this region. We see seasonal differences. Winter temperatures have increased more than summer temperatures. We see minimum temperature extremes have warmed. We have fewer very cold days in the area, cold nights. Minimum temperatures are increasing more than maximum temperatures, and of course this results in decreased diurnal range. Now, these trends have been reported in other regions at a continental scale, at a global scale, but you know, now we can say, well, in our backyard, we see these same trends. In terms of precipitation, same graph. Again, please look at the black line here. This is the actual data for the region. And this shows that average annual precipitation has increased by approximately 10 centimeters over the last century. We see an increase in the intensity and frequency of larger precipitation events, and an increase in durations of periods without rainfall, and particularly in the summer months. So we are seeing evidence of more droughts in the summers. In terms of snow, which is near and dear to our heart in the Northeast, we're seeing a greater percent of winter precipitation occurring as rain, not snow. Greater number of rain on snow events. Decrease in total number of days with snowfall. And all of this results in a general decrease in the snowpack, with, of course, implications for snow frost and biogeochemical implications of that soil freezing. Stream flow, just want to touch base quickly on this, but we do see changes in the magnitude and the timing of stream flow. This is just a graph that shows the date for peak snow melt discharge, just to show that it is occurring at an earlier Julian date on the order of 10 to 20 days. Similar data can be shown for ice out. So just in very general terms, the 20th century climate of the region has become warmer and wetter. Moving on to the projections for the future, this is built on Catherine Hayhoe's work that was first published in Climate Dynamics in 2007. She based her work on 9 coupled atmosphere-ocean GCMs, 3 emission scenarios, and she took the monthly output of the GCM, statistically downscaled these to daily values with a resolution of 150 kilometers squared. And these daily values were input variable infiltration capacity model to simulate evapotranspiration, runoff, snow water equivalent, and soil moisture. So same graph that we saw before, but now focus your attention on the colorful lines in the back end of the graph. And the projections are for an increase of 2.9 to 5.3 degrees C by 2100, with projected increases are higher for summer than winter. So this is actually the opposite of what we saw in the historic trends. Precip, same graph, again, looking at the latter half, we expect a 7 to 14% increase by 2100, and projected increases are highest for winter with no projected change in the summer. Of course, if we have no change in precip in the summer and we have higher temperatures, we'll expect more evaporation, more transpiration, and for this region where we normally don't think of as a droughty region, we may have increased frequency and severity of droughts. Other climate projections include earlier onset of growing season by 7 to 10 days, overall increase in growing season 29 to 43 days, that's huge, overall increase in stream flow due to increase in precipitation, increase in evaporation, and again, very importantly, that decrease in field season soil moisture. So in sum, looking forward, we can generalize and say the climate of the region is projected to get warmer, wetter, and drier, which is always difficult to convey to the public, which is confused anyway. So the other papers kind of built off of this. We'll talk about forest composition and productivity. Jackie Mohan took the lead on this with Roger Cox and Louis Iverson. And they started from first principles, took a climatic envelope approach, and in general, we would expect the envelopes of tolerance or the suitable habitats to move north in latitude and higher in elevation due to the climatic factors we talked about. But we also recognize that there are going to be lags in response due to constraints imposed by reproduction, recruitment, migration, etc. They did try to go to the literature and see if there were any examples or case studies of changes in species composition related to climate. There is one study by Bepich et al. Published in 2008 from Vermont, which did show an upslope shift in the northern hardwood boreal forest ecotone of about 100 meters over a 40-year period. But we basically conclude that the jury is still out. It's very difficult to see these sorts of shifts against the noise of what else is out there on the landscape. Forest productivity, forest principles, increased productivity we would expect due to warmer temperatures, longer growing seasons, carbon, nitrogen, fertilization. But the other side of the coin is, of course, decreased productivity due to extreme climatic events and all those bad characters like acid rain and nitrogen saturation, ozone and mercury, and on and on. Again, they looked on the landscape to see if there were periods that they could relate changes in forest productivity to climatic events. Tree decline is the most obvious of these, and there are documented cases of declines in birch, sugar maple, red spruce, oak, and ash that are related to climatic factors, extended winter thaw, freeze thaw, droughts. In many of these cases, there are other predisposing factors, nitrogen, for example, but there is a clear relationship between the decline and climatic events. Looking to the future, this part was built on Iverson's work, 2008. He based his models on 4 GCMs, 2 emission scenarios, and used the random forest model. He used the FIA data, incredible data set, 134 species over 100,000 plots, and also included data on climate, soil, topography, and land use. And basically, this is where he built the climatic envelopes through the suitable habitat. This table is one I get dyslexic. I always had a hard time reading, so I'll try and simplify. Basically, it's a number of species by percentage change class. And it basically shows that on the order of a fifth to a quarter of those 134 species showed a decline in suitable habitat. Roughly a quarter showed no change in suitable habitat, and 50% or more showed an increase in suitable habitat. There were losers. These included, of course, spruce and fir, our northern hardwoods, beech, birch, and maple, northern white cedar, aspen, and then there were winners, oak, hickory, pine, red cedar, and other more southern species. He also modeled suitable habitat by species. He has these maps available for all the species. They're available online. I use sugar maple and balsam fir just to illustrate the work that he's done. The upper maps show the FIA, the current distribution of the species. The color represents the importance values. The second middle set of maps is for the PCM low emission projections, and the lower maps are for the Hadley high emission projections. And the take-home message here is that there's no change in absolute distribution, but there's a change in the amount of suitable habitat in these. And the final graph that I'll show is model projections by forest type. The left-hand map is the current distribution of forest types based on FIA data. The middle map is the projections based on the low emissions. And then the third map is the high emissions. If you look at the spruce fir in the blue, you can see this drops out in both the low emissions, is almost completely gone in the high emissions. The magenta, I apologize to those people who are colorblind, but the magenta represents the beech, birch, maple. This begins to drop out in the low emission and is mostly gone in the high emission, and it's the oak hickories that are the winners in these. So, conclusions, very broad. Climate change in the Northeast is real. It's unequivocal. Regional models suggest that the climate of the Northeast will become progressively warmer, wetter, and drier. The hydrology of the region has changed, is changing, and is projected to continue to change. And these changes in climate and hydrology are going to have profound and quantifiable effects on forest species composition, productivity, and I have to throw in wildlife, nuisance species, and biogeochemistry because we looked at those as well. The last slide I want to put up, this is a Pew Research Center poll that came out last week that, I don't know if it was fascinating or depressing or both, It basically asked, is there solid evidence the Earth is warming? And back in 2006, 2007, when we started this, 77, 79% of the respondents said, yes, there's solid evidence. And in October 2010, only 59% said there's solid evidence. And so I take this to say it really behooves us to try to put our accumulating data together in a way that's accessible to get it out to the public. We don't need to be advocates, but we need to get the information out there. So on that note, thank you.